Is that is mitigation funding that represents millions of dollars that are going to communities to help them build resilience to these types of disasters. And every dollar that is spent in resilience saves about $6 for these communities. So it's also a good economic investment. Also concerning is that the president has stopped authorizing the use of hazard mitigation grant program funding. This was funding that was given to communities who had just experienced disasters that allowed them to use a percentage of those funds to build resilience. So again, I don't really care. It doesn't really matter whether or not you believe in climate change. We can all agree that these storms are happening more frequently. The effects are becoming more severe. And whatever you want to call it, it's happening. And we need to acknowledge it and help these communities prepare.
And now you have FEMA being used, preparing to send $608 million to states to construct immigrant jails as part of the push to expand capacity for detainees. We just have 10 seconds. But FEMA's role in this, Jeremy.
Yeah, I think FEMA's mission is very clear, to help people before, during, and after disaster. And any single dollar that isn't being spent to help people with that mission is a failure to the American people. That money should not be going to build immigration detention centers. They should not be sending FEMA personnel, which they are doing, to help onboard new ICE agents.
We have to leave it there. Jeremy Edwards, former spokesperson for FEMA, among nearly 200 FEMA workers who signed a Katrina declaration to Congress. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, I'm Dr. Demento, and you are listening to KBOO Portland.
Cable Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. At the annual meeting, members will have the opportunity to meet candidates running in the board election. Final votes will be cast and counted. The results of the elections will be announced at the end of the meeting. Online boarding is open now through the annual meeting at cable.fm/board25. Paper ballots will be sent to members by mail. Again, that's Cable's annual meeting and board election on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios, located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at cable.fm/board25.
The long wait is over. Oasis is back to the U.S. and KBOO has your ticket. Join me, DJ MVK, live on KBOO Saturday night, August 30th at 10 p.m. as I bring you Up in the Sky, an Oasis tour preview. We're going to play 2 hours of Oasis's greatest hits and all sorts of other Oasis stuff. We're going to talk about it. We're going to party. Come join me, DJ MVK. Don't look back in anger. Be a part of Up in the Sky on KBOO Saturday night, August 30th, 10 p.m.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:02 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Jacqueline Keeler.
Life. Great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours unhurt. And now when you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah. Get up, stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
Stand up for your rights.
Ism, schism, game, dine and go to heaven in the Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand. Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people.
Good morning. Welcome to Wednesday Talk Radio on KBOO. I'm your host, Jacqueline Keeler. And so today we are going to be looking at the fifth year anniversary of the Labor Day wildfires that happened here in Oregon in 2020. And I just wanted to hear from all of you, your memories of that event, what you think now about forest fire, and now that we have another wildfire season happening now, and what it was like to go through that during the pandemic. I mean, we were already on lockdown, and then of course we had to be on severe lockdown because the air was not fit to breathe. We had some of the worst air in the world for several days that September. And so, call in. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, KBOO. The number here is 503-231-8187. And just to bring you back to that time, 5 years ago, Labor Day weekend, 2020, we had extreme wind events, which fueled the deadliest and most destructive wildfire season in Oregon's history. The fires killed 11 people, destroyed over 4,000 homes, and burned more than 1 million acres. And some of the key fire incidents included the Alameda and South Auburn Chain fires, Jackson County. The Alameda fire, driven by suspected arson, decimated the communities of Phoenix and Talent near Medford, destroying more than 2,800 structures. The nearby South Auburn Chain, forgive me if I'm mispronouncing that, a fire also burned dozens of homes. The Santiam Canyon fires, Lynn and Marion counties, the Beachy Creek and Lion's Head fires merged to form a large conflagration, devastating towns including Detroit and Gates and killing 5 people. Holiday Farm fire, Lane County. This fire destroyed hundreds of structures and largely leveled the community of Blue River in the McKenzie River corridor. Riverside fire, Clackamas County. The blaze forced mass evacuations in Clackamas County, including suburbs of Portland, and threatened multiple communities. Archie Creek fire, Douglas County. This fire burned over 130,000 acres, destroying over 100 structures and prompting the evacuation of the city of Glide. And the Echo Mountain complex in Lincoln County. This complex of fires on the Oregon coast destroyed hundreds of homes near Lincoln City. And so we're going to look back on that. It was a tragedy. People died and people lost their homes. Many are still trying to find some sort of remedy for the loss of their homes. Others have won lawsuits against the state. And so it's still an ongoing story. If you have any memories of that time or experiences with those fires, please let me know. We right now have an ongoing fire here in Oregon called the Flat Fire near Sisters, Oregon. As of yesterday, it remains at nearly 22,000 acres burning with 7% containment. And so it's still an ongoing fire happening near Sisters, Oregon. So, if you experience this or you have memories of that time, please call in and share it here on KBOO. The number here is 503-231-8187. And So the and we're also going to discuss how the effect of forest fire on our health. New studies have found that that it's far more dangerous than had been presumed. It is the particulate in wildfire smoke inhalation is more toxic than regular particulate, and we have Oregon State University did a study investigating the link to infant health in Klamath County and Oregon. The study qualified the number of deaths caused by increased fine particulate matter from climate-driven fires. So it's definitely very dangerous, particularly to the most vulnerable in our communities, and definitely it's a threat borne largely by of course the rural communities, but also that smoke goes everywhere and also impacts many very vulnerable members of our community. And I think there's a Yale School of Public Health study that found that long-term exposure to wildfire smoke is associated with a higher risk of death. As many of you may remember, at that time, it was actually really difficult to even, if you didn't already have one, to purchase an air purifier at that time. I know that I had a really difficult time doing that, and particularly for my mother, who lives in southeastern Washington State, and we couldn't even get we couldn't order them online, get them delivered. And so we actually, my husband and I, in the middle of this really terrible air quality, I think it was touching 500 on the AQI scale, which is some of the worst in the world, that is actually was the worst in the world at that point, we had to drive through the gorge. And I took a photo, and it was on my Instagram, of I saw an eagle sitting on a tree in the woods there along the gorge, the Columbia River Gorge, and it was just, you think about the animals out there who don't have any protection from this, and certainly their studies have since shown that many are affected and die from the smoke inhalation. And and of course, the causes of this are largely traced to climate change and our own actions, long-term actions, releasing carbon into the atmosphere. And we don't, it's not just humans that pay the price, but all creatures pay the price. And I know that there has been a recent request for help for animals undergoing, I'll get into that more later, subjected to this. And we ended up having to go to Yakima, Washington, to purchase an air purifier. That was the only place that we could find in the area that was still selling them. And so we then drove it to my mother's house and gave it to her so she could have it in her home. Of course, she was on lockdown as well, and so it was a really strange time. It was surreal to drive through that. And I imagine that my husband and I got some exposure to that fine particulate. And so I'd love to hear your stories. We're here on KBOO Wednesday Talk Radio discussing the fifth anniversary of the Labor Day fires in Oregon in 2020. And what your thoughts are on the threat that greater incidences of wildfire, what effect does it have on you and your family and your community, and what would you like to see done? I mean, I know that my mother is from the Navajo Nation near the Grand Canyon. She's from a small town called Cameron, and which is near the entry to the south rim of the Grand Canyon. And of course, there was a huge fire recently in the Grand Canyon. And of course, that was originally started as a form of they allowed it to burn as a form of healthy forest management. And I used to be, many years ago, the executive director of the California Indian Basket Weavers Association. And one of the things that, of course, the basket weavers were very interested in was this sort of fire control. And many tribes, of course, work with state agencies and federal agencies to conduct these controlled burns in order to sort of stop larger, more unmanageable forest fires. And also it helps with some of the, for the basket weavers, there are certain branches, sort of roots and shoots that they use, particularly the shoots that are only really come out straight and the right sort of texture for basket weaving. And so some of these ancient sort of cultural this art of basket weaving, it relies on these traditional practices. But of course, I put this question to all of you. You know, obviously, what are the different techniques that we need to use to begin to really reduce the events of fire, wildfire spread, and the inhalation? And I understand many of the wildfire firefighters, they actually don't wear masks right now when they fight, and they are exposed. And it's actually, I think they're not even allowed to wear masks while they're out there. And what is the cost of that to that community? And of course, as many of you know, some of the folks out there fighting our fires are incarcerated people who are put there on the front lines for minimal wages, and putting their lives on the line to save our communities. Also, of course, I'd like to honor the tribes which have their own fire jumpers, and of course the Navajo Nation firefighters were on the front lines there fighting the fire here in the Grand Canyon, and played a large role in that as well, in containing that. And so that's the Dragon Bravo fire at the Grand Canyon's North Rim. And so that's through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They have their own wildland fire management department. So yeah, so once again, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'd love to hear from all of you about your experiences and memories of what happened 5 years ago, and your thoughts on what we can do about more forest fires and that sort of thing. So I'd love to hear from you all. Just a reminder, 5 years ago, we saw the deadliest wildfire season in our state history. 11 people died in that fire, in those fires, and more than 4,000 homes were burned, and tens of thousands of Oregonians evacuated. A lot of this is traced to global temperatures that have been rising for decades, and even here in Oregon, in the Western Cascade Mountains, which have been pretty wet, now they are facing more serious fires and a worsening drought as well. So across the state, we definitely have been seeing more fires igniting, and more often, and more land being burned, more landscapes being burned. And so this whole converged to basically create this wildfire in Oregon 5 years ago. And I would just be curious to how this experience changed your idea about the risk of fire in for your home, for your community, for your health, for your loved ones, and for the environment. What did you think of that experience? If you were in lockdown or you were in your home trying to protect yourself from COVID, and suddenly now you could not even walk outside, you had to basically, get an air purifier. Or I saw that there was when people couldn't get air purifiers, there was recommendations to basically buy a regular sort of fan and then attach sort of a filter to it and put that in your window or something. And if I'm not sure how many of you had to do that. And I know that being a part of the Native American community, you know, many Native people didn't have access, even those living here in Portland, to air purifiers in their homes, and much less air conditioning. So it was quite a lot to have to, for them to be locked in and in their homes, and because it was also quite hot. And yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jacqueline Keeler. And the number here is 503-231-8187. And many people lost their homes, and they're still looking for a new home, some of these folks, after 5 years. And others have won multi-million dollar court judgments and settlements. But I understand. I don't think that Oregon has a long-term plan to pay for the next big fire. So give me your thoughts on what the state of Oregon is doing about this and how it's impacted you as well. And as we approach another Labor Day weekend 5 years later. So I understand that homeowners are facing soaring premiums and few property insurance options over wildfires. And after that devastating fire season in 2020, major insurers in Central, South, and Eastern Oregon dramatically pulled back, forcing some homeowners to have to go to an insurer of last resort. And I imagine this also impacts the value of their homes. And of course, it's, to a certain extent, it is the building of homes in these sorts of regions. Everyone wants to build a home out in the forest when they retire or something. And bringing more people into these sort of areas may also be exposing more people to fires and possibly even causing them. So, so there have been folks who have lost their home, who have lost their insurance, just been dropped by their insurer, or they are now facing, having to pay many, many times. In one case, this woman in Bend is now having to pay 9 times to Safeco what she was charged a year earlier. And and her broker couldn't find her another insurer at all. And Oregon has been, is actually now collaborating with the Wildfire Nonprofit to help Oregonians harden their homes and keep insurance. I think many of you may have seen the Palisades fire in Los Angeles, in Southern California, and there was one house that survived the fire, and it was built specifically to withstand a fire. And and it's very interesting. I don't know if you could see the YouTube video on YouTube and learn how the architect designed the home to withstand fire. And it was the only house left in its neighborhood. And I imagine that's what they mean by harden. And so the state has signed a memorandum of agreement with the CEO of the South Carolina-based Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, which oversees the Wildfire Prepared Certification Program. And so the program offers homeowners in California and now Oregon certificates for undertaking specific wildfire prevention work around their homes. And I used to live in Nevada City, California, and I lived in an A-frame out in the woods. And we definitely had to practice, keeping a defensible space around the home, keeping trees away from the house, and not having any real vegetation around the home. And I imagine that this is something that more people are going to have to look at doing as well. And I know that the home that survived in the Pacific Palisades was actually had a metal roof, and it also had fire-resistant insulation under that roof, which made it very unlikely to be susceptible to sparks or catching fire, and actually had no had no vents either. So that way, it's completely tight, airtight, and no spark could kind of drift into the house and start the fire from the inside. So there's a lot of things to look at there. Let me know what you think about this, and if you have any feelings about this topic about wildfires in Oregon. And how what your experiences were 5 years ago, and what you think now 5 years later, what should be done to try to protect wildlife, to protect humans as well. And you can call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. So we have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on Wednesday Talk Radio.
And no spark can kind of drift into the house and start.
Hello?
Oh, hello. I didn't know if I was the caller.
I think so. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was listening to your thing. So was today the anniversary of the big fire?
Well, I guess Labor Day would be, but yeah, that's yeah, been 5 years.
So it was bigger than the Tillamook burn?
Apparently so.
This is a Multnomah County thing, not an Oregon State thing, right?
No, this is a state thing. Yeah, it was.
I mean, that was a big one.
Yeah, that was very big. And that was, that burned, yeah, very, very hot, and it took a lot of decades to rebuild that forest.
And anyway, I just wanted to say, I live out in East County, and I was here when that happened, and the east wind out here, which everybody knows, Crown Point, it breaks the wind meter at 100. So it's probably going 110 or whatever. Believe me, you don't want to open your hatchback. Blow it right off into the gorge. But anyway, yeah, it was coming really fast, and luckily the wind stopped right before it got here. But what I wanted to bring up this point is I've been listening to this YouTube. Anyway, the managerial class and what they are, the professional people that hold the positions who make the decisions for the rest of us. And I'm talking about the Multnomah County commissioners, right?
Mm-hmm.
You follow me?
Yeah, good.
You hear about ODOT needs $400 billion, all this money, we all need all this money. And I think people should realize that they could vote fireworks illegal. It's been 5 years. They could say, oh, from, you know, June 1st till September, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they won't do it. They won't do it. And you got to ask yourself why. It's so simple, it wouldn't cost a dime. Now, of course, you got to enforce it and write tickets and blah, 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 and people are still going to do it. But I live out here, and it's really dry, and people are allowed to light off fireworks.
Wow.
It's to me, it's just totally crazy.
Wow. What are the restrictions?
You know, you ask, what can we do? You know, what can we do? Well, of course, you can cut all your trees. I'll tell you what. Clear cut all the forests, and you don't got to worry about it. Nothing will burn, right? But that's really not the answer,
no.
Because then everything gets hot, right? You got to have, my house is surrounded by trees. If I cut them all down, you know, right now without air conditioning, my house is 75, mm-hmm. and it's 95 out. And it's all because of the old growth trees. Well, if I cut them all down around my house, I'm going to need energy. You know, it sounds great, yeah. Get an air conditioner, but I guarantee you, there isn't enough power in our state to run everybody's air conditioning.
Yeah, wow.
You know, there's only so much power that, and unless, you know, like Elon, these guys, let's build more nuclear power plants, but I really don't think that's the solution. I think just starting simple, start local, is like, hey, let's make a law, no fireworks. I mean, it would make me sleep better, right?
Yeah.
When my drunken neighbor's lighting off M80s and they're smoking cigarettes, and it's just like, it's not a matter of if, it's gonna happen again. I mean, that kid was a stupid little kid, but it was so dry, global, you know, I mean, he lit off a firework. He's not the only kid that's thrown a firework somewhere on some trail. It's just really hot and dry. But I just, to me, it's just amazing that firework, because other places, I think, yeah, Vancouver, it's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the other thing, so I wanted to bring up one other point, kind of change gears here a little bit, about the money thing, okay? You know, the governor right now, they're lobbying, they're going to have a special session for more ODOT money, right? Oregon mm-hmm. Department of Transportation, okay? So I'll get local. Up here, you know the Sandy River and the historic Columbia River Highway. Have you ever gone swimming there?
No, I haven't.
Anyway, from Interstate 84, which is a big truck stop, Troutdale, all the way up to Sandy in the summer, when it hits 100, there will be thousands of cars pulled off into the gravel, and they walk down the river and they go swimming, right? Okay. I got a flat tire. I pulled off in the gravel. Nice gravel pull-off off an old historic Highway 30. Been there for over 100 years, right? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, and I'm a construction worker, I come home, I'm driving home, and they got like a 30-man crew, big, huge drillers, and they put a guardrail and blocked off every gravel pull-off on the entire highway.
Wow.
For like, from Troutdale all the way up. Okay?
Wow.
Now, so when you get a flat tire, you don't have an emergency pull-off, right? The bicycles don't have an emergency pull-off. Well, about 3 months later, I'm driving home every day, going out to Intel, come back, and tore it all out. And if you go up there right now in the bike lane, you'll see circles that are like, I don't know, 3-foot circles where they have these big drills. I mean, we're talking $1 million mistake. And so, does ODOT need more money, right?
Uh-huh.
And so what it is, it's the upper managerial class. They know more. You know, we don't need these homeless people. We don't need people swimming in the river. Fishermen, it's just crazy. Somebody made that decision. Never hits the news. Totally protected. Nothing happens to them. And so they need more money. Okay, one last story, and I'll let the next callers get on. So if these listeners that know Highway 30, there's a spring box. And a spring box, in case you don't know what it is, where there's a spring, you dig a hole, and you build a box. Now, you build it out of concrete, and this is up here, you know, it's Springdale. So there's all these springs. So for hundreds of years, I don't know who built it, but it's right on Highway 30, the spring box. Mm-hmm. People would pull over and fill up their water jugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it, and it could be the driest time of the year, and it's flowing crystal clear, really nice, right? Free water. Well, then one day, where everybody pulls off, there's big boulders in the gravel. And the pipe, the nice water pipe, is cut off. Somebody destroyed it. And all there is a sign that says, if you want water, go down to Lewis and Clark. You know, kind of like talking to the homeless community, if you want. But there's sign. It doesn't say ODOT. It doesn't say Corbett Water District. It doesn't say Portland Water District. There's no, it's just a sign. That somebody, and so I'm asking around, and finally, nobody really knows, and it's like, oh, that was ODOT, because it was a danger, people pulling, and it's just such BS, because with all that money that they used to destroy it, all they had to do was dig out a little bit and make the parking lot bigger. Hmm. Okay, so follow me on this. So then they need new traffic signs, ODOT. They put in the traffic signs, they build the road, they fix the, so they do it at night, I see them out there, okay, and the lines are marked. Corbett Water District, right? The ODOT guy puts his big auger, they're supposed to dig, you know, like he couldn't move the sign one way or the other, right in the summer, like this time of year. Turn on my water, it goes dead. That doesn't happen, you know, it just, there's no water. What happened? ODOT drilled a hole through the main Corbett water line, okay?
Oh my God.
Now, what I could do is I could go, oh, okay, that's too bad. I'll load up my jugs, get in my car, and go down to the Dabney Springs spring box because there's always good, clean, fresh. No. ODOT destroyed that. So I know I'm changing gears on the firewood thing, but I mean, but you think about it. Who's running the show? The governor could make a, Tina could go, hey, you know what? I'm really passionate about this. I know people that have died in fires. I'm telling you guys, make a law to make fireworks all illegal in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I think it is? And I mean, this may sound crazy, but I think when you get down to it, there's probably a local fireworks lobby because somebody makes a lot of money on those fireworks. Mm-hmm. And I know everybody wants to do it, but sometimes for the good of the, you know, people, you got to make things illegal. There's always, you know, people would like to shoot their guns off downtown Portland, but you got to make laws, right? Anyway,
yeah.
Don't get me going.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking.
But you asked the question, you know, what can we do?
Uh-huh.
And it's like there's such simple things you can do. It doesn't have to be a big think tank and $1 billion to solve the problem. One, you write out tickets for anybody caught building the fire on the river, and you make them hard. You know, you make them hard tickets. So second offense, going to jail. Ooh, yeah. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for calling in. So, yeah, I just looked at the number of, in 2019, the Oregon State Fire Marshal reported that 1,173 fireworks-related fires across the state led to one death and 37 injuries. This was in the 5 years, so this would be between 2014 and 2019. And the city of Portland fireworks caused 10 fires in 2022 and 46 fires in 2023. They sound not like wildfires. The Eagle Creek fire burned over 48,000 acres, which was the largest wildfire in Multnomah County's history in 2017. And so that was also caused by that. There are, I grew up in Washington State, and I think that Oregon's, I guess I was always under the impression that Oregon's firework laws were a bit more tough than Washington State's. In Oregon, consumer fireworks that explode, fly in the air, or travel more than 6 feet on the ground are illegal statewide, including firecrackers, bottle rockets, and M80s. And so that's, I guess, to expand that ban and to enforce it more might be what we should be looking at. But to ban them completely is another option, obviously, especially since it does, it's never completely sure whether people are doing it properly. I once did attend a birthday party during the 4th of July run by one of my daughter's friend's father, and he was a firefighter, and he had a big barrel of water, and after every little sparkler he would make them dip it in the water. He was very safety conscious in their use of fireworks, but that was something. So yeah, thank you so much. I'd love to hear from other callers. Okay, we have a caller. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Hey, is it me?
Yes, hi. Good morning.
Oh, wow. Hey, cool. I never call in. I do totally agree. Fireworks are horrible, and there's a huge cultural issue around why we love to use them, or why some people like love to use them, and I agree with that. But I completely disagree that cutting down trees is a solution.
I think he was being ironic there. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and I just want to advocate more for sustainable forestry not geared towards timber extraction, but towards actual forest management and fostering biodiversity, and like out of a recognition that our forests have burned sometimes annually for thousands and thousands of years, and that these are fire dependent ecosystems. And I don't know if people are like aware of this, but like, you know, if you go into a forest that's been logged, they're infested with invasive plants.
Mm-hmm.
And those plants, they grow and grow and grow. They crowd out the native biodiversity, and then they are just a timber box waiting to explode the next time a fire comes through. And it's just so different than the sort of fire ecology that we used to have, and I think it's a problem that people think logging is any kind of solution. I think there's a hugely powerful lobby trying to convince people that logging is actually a way to manage fires, but it's actually typically exacerbates the fire issue. I got to protect all good forests. You got to, ultimately, we got to keep oil in the ground, everybody. That's the big problem we got. We're burning fossil fuels. We've got a suicidal society, and we live in a death cult, and we're turning the planet into a parking lot.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, kind of the root of the issue for me. So we got some big problems to solve, but we can't solve them with these little fixes and these little bandages. And I think that if we want to really address massive wildfires becoming an increasingly more lethal and devastating issue, then we're going to have to look more seriously at the root causes. And I think there's a huge cultural aversion to really reckoning with any of that. But, you know, that's just my two cents on the matter.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I totally agree. And certainly fostering biodiversity is vital. I think for wildlife prevention and building resilient ecosystems, I think that was what would used to be here. And certainly turning, having invasive species on the ground and even turning forests into sort of a crop management situation, monoculture situation is very dangerous to our forests in Oregon. And hopefully by mimicking and restoring natural processes, we can create environments that are naturally resistant to extreme wildfire events. So, I totally agree with that. And if anybody knows more about those different sort of ways that we could do that, obviously, I'm looking at some of the stuff here that's been footnoted for me, but promoting natural fire breaks, ecosystem engineers such as beavers create wetlands and ponds that act as natural fire breaks, slowing or stopping the spread of wildfires. Encouraging healthier forests, diverse forests with a variety of tree species are more resilient than monocultures, which can become dry and flammable. Leveraging natural grazing, and so looking at animals like goats, cattle, and wild herbivores to reduce fuel loads by consuming dry, flammable vegetation, and then restore natural ecosystem balance. And removing invasive species and non-native grazers like mule deer allows native fire-resilient vegetation to regenerate. So this breaks the cycle of frequent high-intensity fires that destroy native shrublands. And one of the things is when these fires burn so hot, they basically really act to kill any regeneration that might happen. We have another caller. Hi, you are on Wednesday Talk Radio. Hi, Steve. Oh, okay. I guess we just lost him. Okay. All right. And then another thing you can do for creating more biodiversity in our forest is to reintroduce keystone species, like rewilding projects that reintroduce native herbivores and like bison and to help manage vegetation and reduce wildfire risks. So and of course I mentioned fire management techniques that foster biodiversity include prescribed and cultural burning, and these are low intensity cool fires that are a natural necessary process for biodiversity. Prescribed burning, particularly when incorporating indigenous knowledge, like I mentioned with the California Indian basket weavers, can reduce fuel buildup and create a mosaic of burnt and unburnt patches. The mosaic increases habitat diversity and promotes the growth of fire-adapted plant species. So this is basically tapping into the millions, eons of years of evolution that's occurred to create a mix of plant life and fauna that are much more sustainable for our landscape here in Oregon. And so those are some of the ideas. I know that a previous, I should mention that Trump issued a executive order in March 1st, 2025, that basically it's titled The Immediate Expansion of American Timber Production. I guess this is sort of a version of his drill baby drill, extractive resource focused occupation of our lands, of our homelands for Native people. And so he definitely is, it's a Section 1 purpose. The production of timber, lumber, paper, bioenergy, and other wood products is critical to our nation's well-being. Timber production is essential for crucial human activities like construction and energy production. Furthermore, as recent disasters demonstrate, forest management and wildfire risk reduction projects can save American lives and communities. So this is definitely an attempt to increase, large-scale, forest of timber production, which I think equates to clear cutting, which has its own dangers, including erosion and things like that, and which can endanger even communities in these timber areas. And so tell me what you think of that. What do you think of Trump's whole focus on increasing timber production, but also fighting any sort of policies that are meant to reduce our carbon output, including electric cars, and he's even anti-wind turbines. He went on a big rant about that last week. And so anything that might actually mitigate the issue of global warming or climate change, he is trying to ignore all of that and just go back to complete, you know, colonial exploitation of our resources and our mother, the Earth. You know, these aren't, I think calling her a resource is a way of sort of inscribing in our minds how we're supposed to think and relate to our mother when we are her children, and that's how I was raised to view that. And going back to what a previous caller had also mentioned about people needing to you know, reduce our use of air conditioners because of the threat to the to the energy grid here in Oregon. And and so I should note that Portland, the city of Portland, is offering another 10,000 free air conditioners. This was reported in June to boost climate resilience. So they are trying to, Portland is hoping to distribute another 10,000 free air conditioners to qualifying residents by the end of next year. People can apply by calling 311 or by filling out an online form. The program has already exceeded its initial goal to deliver 15,000 units in less than 5 years. So that's what the city of Portland is doing. Looking at the previous caller also mentioned AI data centers and their energy use and how that is also endangering our grid or electrical grid. I see that Oregon data centers' electricity use is surging due to AI growth, consuming around 11% of the state's power in 2023. I imagine that has grown since then in the last 2 years. And so the demand is expected to continue to rise rapidly. This increased demand necessitates significant grid and utility upgrades, costing utilities millions to serve, and is leading to new legislation for data centers to cover their energy costs. So these major facilities includes Google's in the Dalles supporting AI workloads, and which drives this consumption that now rivals the energy needs of cities, of entire cities. Yeah, one data center can use as much as a whole city can. And so that's another issue. I know that some of the forest fires in, I think, in, particularly in California, were started by utility poles that were sparking with PG&E, not PGE, but PG&E in California. And so that's another, it seems like it's a whole bunch of factors that are converging together to continue to create a situation that is, I mean, excuse the pun, but highly flammable, highly highly dangerous. And so I don't know if I would want to live through another experience like the 2020 Labor Day fires. The caller had also asked if the Tillamook fires was the largest statewide, but that was actually 350,000 acres that were burned. In 2020, the total, and this is really looking at the total wildfires that had occurred that that season, that wildfire season, it was over 1 million acres that were burned. So that was quite a substantial number of acres that went up in flames that in 2020. So yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. We are discussing the fifth anniversary of the Labor Day fires here in Oregon, which were incredibly deadly, and you know, people lost their lives and their homes, and many are still trying to regain a sense of home. The trauma of that, of evacuation, of being basically a refugee in your own community, in your own state, it also has a huge it's very harmful to people's mental health and to their feeling of well-being. Those are the things that are occurring as well. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. You can call in here in the KBOO studio at 503-231-8187. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Of course, you know, the issue of wildfire and lung cancer is one that, you know, we all know. We don't know how much we were exposed. I know that I was using an air purifier. I had several in my home going in 2020. And I did, you know, I am a journalist, so I did, you know, talk to folks, you know, at different state agencies here in Oregon. And one of them, who actually is a scientist who works for the state, and they do studies on air quality, had told me at the time that they had an air purifier working in their laboratory, but it was only reducing improving the air quality by a minimal amount. It actually didn't. So the 480, 500 AQI that we are facing, the air purifiers are not really, they help, but they're not a solution, you know, having those in your home. And so I would love to hear from folks if there are other ways to keep homes clear of smoke. Obviously, I mentioned that home that was purpose-built to resist forest fire, wildfires in Los Angeles. And of course, I mentioned that they didn't have any vents, venting out. The vents were very minimal and protected from sparks that might enter the home and catch fire. But I think that would, it would also meant, they also said that the home didn't have smoke damage, so it was much easier for the people to move back in afterwards. So that's something to consider. Hi, we have another caller. Hi, caller, you are on Wednesday Talk Radio. Hi.
I wanted to remind folks that the other half of drill, baby, drill is burn, baby, burn.
I'd have to agree with that, yes.
I think that's where that may have come from. But just on the, a couple of people have mentioned fireworks, and I've wondered about this. I don't like them, but I'm just wondering the deeper, like, well, they have to be extremely loud. That's one of their features. So is it the light? Isn't it the light? That's, I imagine they could make them not be loud, but would people like them? So to me, it's like a warlike sound, yes? Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah, like those M80s. Yeah, the, what about, mm-hmm. like, have you ever seen those drone displays? That look
drone.
Like
no, I haven't seen a drone yet, and I
well,
really hope not.
Well, yeah, they're like they do these sort of lighted displays that make these amazing sort of formations, and
that would be interesting
instead of fireworks. Do you mean?
Uh-huh.
That'd be an interesting
yeah.
thing. Yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Sort of. So I'm in agreement. I don't know if it would be how difficult, but it, you know, I think as long as we speak about it and raise the question, then you know. Others may have been, but you know, a lot of people think, well, but it's such a cultural, you know, you never, but then you hear a few people saying, well, I've questioned this idea myself. And, you know, hey, our dogs hate them. That should tell people something,
yeah.
okay? Your dogs are, your yes. cats are very, yeah, sensitive, attuned animals. And that's why we love them so much.
Oh, yeah. It's, right? I mean, if you're in a neighborhood that where the folks really are into fireworks, it can feel like you're in a war zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
I think.
And they can't even wait till the day. Like, they got to do it, like, 2 days before sometime. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or a week later. No, no, it's like, it's not even sacrosanct like that. You know, usually you don't celebrate Easter or Christmas or anything 2 days before in any way. So, yeah.
Well,
okay.
Thank you for
premature
calling.
Premature ejaculation, I guess I could.
Yeah. I don't know if we can have that on the show. But, yeah, thank you so much. And, yeah, I mean, it's... I grew up actually in Eastern Washington in the Tri-Cities, and of course it's desert there, you know, sagebrush and some grasses, but that area burns too, you know. It's not just the forests that burn, but the deserts burn as well, and I know that in some neighborhoods in Richland, Washington, it can be quite. The fireworks can be quite intense. People spend a lot of money on them. Sometimes some folks I know spend several thousand dollars, and it can be quite overwhelming and scary, even for humans. I don't like it at all. So, I definitely appreciate places where they have much stricter control on fireworks, and I think it is really necessary. And, you know, I mean, I know that a lot of tribes sell fireworks and sell all the fireworks that are legal other places as well. And maybe that's a something that tribes should think about and reconsider as well to help with preventing wildfires. There is, you know, getting back to wildfire and lung cancer, there is a clear and direct link between wildfire smoke and increased risk of lung cancer. Long-term exposure significantly increases the risk, especially for professional wildland firefighters, like I mentioned earlier. And actually, they are not even allowed to wear masks. And even when they're not doing anything particularly, they're just watching, or they have to be exposed at all times to wildfire smoke. And the toxicity of wildfire smoke may also worsen outcomes for people who already have lung cancer. And as I mentioned, OSU had done studies on its impact on infants and children. I can't imagine even what it does to pregnant women who are, and their unborn children. These are serious issues. And wildfire smoke is a hazardous mix of gases and fine particulate matter known as PM2.5, which is particularly dangerous due to its microscopic size. There's carcinogenic compounds in wildfire smoke. It's more toxic than typical air pollution because it contains a higher concentration of carcinogens, particularly from fires that burn houses, plastics, and other industrial materials in addition to vegetation. These harmful chemicals include polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, PAHs, benzene, formaldehyde, and heavy metals. And they have, because the particulate is so small, it has deep lung penetration. These tiny PM2.5 particles can travel deep into the lungs and enter the bloodstream, causing inflammation and oxidative stress that can lead to DNA damage. So this is actual damage to your DNA. Higher toxicity studies indicate that wildfire PM2.5 is more toxic than regular urban PM2.5 and may generate more free radicals, which can accelerate the development of cancer. And so those are pretty serious things. I mean, it's more than just enduring the forest fires and fighting them back, but there's long-term consequences to our human communities and also to animal communities. And I know that there are calls to support, here in Oregon, the blaze, a fire destroyed a bird sanctuary. And so there's the flat fire near Sisters, which is ongoing right now, is still ongoing right now. And and I would love to hear folks what they have to think about that. How are we going to actually address this issue and change? We obviously need to do more and maybe even rethink our whole firefighting policies and even how we build and where we build. I know that here in Portland we have the urban growth boundary. Maybe we need to look at more of those statewide to stop this. The Think Wild, a wildlife hospital in Bend, is urging the public, this was published 2 days ago in Central Oregon Daily News, is urging the public to be on the lookout for injured wildlife in or around the burn zone of the flat fire. The nonprofit organization said Central Oregon's native species are well adapted to protecting themselves from fire, but if you find injured animal, you can loosely wrap it in cotton. And so if you are, near the flat fire right now, you can contact Think Wild at 541-221-8680 if you find an injured animal. But another way to help, they say, is to leave fresh water outside, but slightly away from your home so that the species can return to their habitat safely. So this is our show this week. We're entering Labor Day, and I hope you all are safe. And I hope that we can actually, as a community, come together and do something thoughtful about this situation and stop this runaway, man-made, I would say, human-made situation that is endangering our lives, endangering wildlife, endangering the environment. And of course, that does involve reducing our carbon footprint. And maybe there are ways we can think about that. Certainly in Portland itself, we can rededicate ourselves to the public transit system. I think that after the pandemic, ridership has gone down significantly. We need to continue to protect that. And of course, there is the new electric vehicles. We could have a whole show discussing that, I think, and how Trump is doing away with those federal the support of that industry. So thank you so much. This has been Jacqueline Keeler here with Wednesday Talk Radio, and I look forward to talking to you again in a few weeks. Thank you.
Sunday, bloody Sunday.
To KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
KBOO's loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th.